On today's Hot Zone, counterfeiting. It's a global problem that's eating up a lot of money, probably $500 billion. That's all coming up on today's podcast. Stick around.
This is the Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
So President Trump signed an executive order last week directing the government and to cut down on counterfeiting. It's a major problem. There are mom and pop stores all over the country that are really going out of business because every time they come out with a product, somebody in China counterfeits that product and puts it up for sale on Amazon cheaper than they can do it. And a couple of years ago, I put together a documentary about counterfeiting with my good friend, Bob Hamer. Take a look. Bob accompanied our team to Hong Kong, the gateway to China, source of the vast majority of counterfeit goods seized in the United States. Bob and I have been going through the market here in, this is called the ladies market, the night market here in Kowloon in Hong Kong. And Bob, we've been seeing, you know, watches and clothing and you name it. You can find it a knockoff here if you want to. But what you were telling me is that it goes a lot deeper than just these kinds of products.
Yeah, Chuck, it's much more involved than just the Dolce & Gabbana jeans and polo shirts. What we were dealing with counterfeit pharmaceuticals. In fact, we were purchasing counterfeit Viagra. Now, I'm not saying these were the little blue pills in a plastic bag. These were counterfeit Viagra that came in the pharmaceutical bottles with the instructions, Pfizer, Viagra, everything looked official. When it was tested, it was not Viagra.
So here in Hong Kong, I noticed there's dispensaries and pharmacies all around here. I wonder if we could find counterfeit Viagra here. Do you have Viagra?
Well, 100 milligram Viagra.
How many pills?
How many?
Four
pills. It's 100 per pill. That's $12.90 a pill. Is it real?
Original.
It's original. Where's this from? India?
In England.
England?
Yes.
So Bob's with us today, and I want to bring him in. Bob, thanks for being with us. That was really a fun trip, wasn't it, going over to Hong Kong like that?
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. That was an experience for me, being right there at Hong Kong and then on the border at North and South Korea, right there in the DMZ.
Right. Now, you've got a tremendous amount of experience. I have to say it was a little uncomfortable. It was a little awkward going into those stores and shopping for Viagra with you because those guys thought we were together, I think.
And we brought a few smiles to these merchants.
Yeah, for sure. So anyhow, tell me a little bit about your experience with counterfeiting. And one of the things that I noticed in the reports from the press about the president's executive order last week is that they're saying it's actually a national security issue. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I think with what we found, we started the investigation.
Wait, before you start there, wait, tell me a little bit about your background so that people know a little bit more about Bob Hamer and how you came to be the guy to talk to about counterfeiting.
Yeah, I spent 4 years on active duty in the Marine Corps and then 26 years in the FBI. Much of my career in the FBI was in various undercover capacities. So I successfully played the role as a street level drug dealer, a high rolling drug dealer, a contract killer, a pedophile. I mean, I've had an awful lot of interesting experiences, but this was a case that began, we were targeting counterfeit cigarettes. And even the counterfeit cigarettes was a national security issue because we knew that counterfeit cigarettes were being manufactured in North Korea and China were coming into the United States. They were filtering down to mom and pop grocery stores that were owned by Middle Easterners who were using the proceeds from these counterfeit goods to finance terrorism groups overseas. So the Bureau had a real interest in shutting off the counterfeit goods coming into the country and then following them to identify essentially these mom and pop grocery stores that were financing terrorism with the proceeds from the counterfeit cigarettes.
Yeah, that is really disturbing, actually, to think about. I'm here in Panama, and down here, every corner grocery store is owned by a Chinese family. For some reason here in Panama, every industry is owned by a particular race or a particular nation of people. If you want to buy jewelry, you're going to buy it from a Jew. If you want to buy a used car, you're going to buy it from an Arab here in Panama. I don't know why that is, but if you're going to have a corner grocery store, it's pretty much always going to be owned by a Chinese person. And one of the things that we've noticed living here is that anything you buy in that store is going to be counterfeit. Anything you buy in that store is going to be a level of cheap far below the cheapest thing you'd ever find in the United States. And so it is kind of disturbing to know that so much of the profits of that are going back and are helping to fund criminal activity.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about cheap goods, I know one of the products that I ended up getting was a pair of Dolce & Gabbana jeans, which in a Beverly Hills boutique were going for $150 to $200 a pair. I purchased a pair for about $7 that had a certificate of authenticity, had the Italian labels on them. But the certificates of authenticity were counterfeit, as were the jeans that were actually made in China. So, yeah, I mean, one of my main targets, I said to him one day, I said, you know, your idea of copyright is right to copy. And he kind of laughed and he said, yeah, give me a sample. I make it for you. And that's the way they operated.
Wow. And, you know, I just finished reading a book about Chinese culture and specifically as it relates to technology and artificial intelligence. But one of the things the guy was saying is that essentially it's sort of baked into their culture that if you're not cheating, you're not trying over there. And they don't see it as a bad thing to steal from other people or to copy from other people. They only see it as a bad thing if you get caught. So basically, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. But if you get caught, you're not trying hard enough.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so when we went over to Hong Kong and talked about we went to the border there with North Korea in South Korea, talked about the super notes and the counterfeiting of currency. Give me just a quick rundown on what that was all about.
Yeah. Like I said, Operation Smoking Dragon was a 3-year undercover assignment. It began with counterfeit cigarettes. It evolved into counterfeit pharmaceuticals, counterfeit postage stamps, eventually $60 million shoulder fire missile conspiracy. And at one point, the Bureau said to me, look, let's see if we can get the supernote. And I really wasn't too familiar with the term other than I think it was Rush Hour 2 in the movie. They talked about counterfeit money being made over in Asia. Well, it turned out that North Korea was counterfeiting our $100 bill, a near-perfect replica of our bill. In fact, there were three top-secret marks on the bills that by the time we ended up going to court, the government had to reveal two of those top-secret marks. Essentially, what happened when they first started putting out these bills, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing would say, hey, wait a minute, Chuck Holton isn't on the $100 bill. It's Benjamin Franklin. So North Korea was getting this knowledge and they were correcting the bills so that every time our government would put out a notice to the banks or to merchants, this is how you can spot the counterfeit bills, that North Korea would correct their plates. And it came down to the point that there were three top secret marks that you couldn't even see with the naked eye. But these bills were near perfect. They used the same type of paper we did. They had the same printing presses that we had. And with the naked eye, you couldn't tell what was real and what was counterfeit.
That's unbelievable. Do you think that there's still that's still happening?
You know, I really don't know. Obviously, in the last couple of years, we've come out with a new $100 bill. So that's supposed to be counterfeit proof, but if you recall, in 1996, we came out with a new $100 bill that was supposed to be counterfeit proof. And those were the bills that I was actually purchasing. I purchased $2 million of the counterfeit bills. And then we seized close to $6 or $7 million in these counterfeit bills. But those were pre what this latest iteration of the bills are. So I'm not sure if they're counterfeiting those or not. The old bills are still in circulation, so they may be they may still be counterfeiting those bills.
Yeah, I mean, if they were that good, I can't imagine, especially in places around the world that are, you know, not in the United States, where the $100 bill is a store of value. It wouldn't surprise me if there weren't trillions of dollars of that stuff floating around out there.
And yeah, I think even our government can't say how much is out there.
Right.
I mean, they just can't even predict how much of the counterfeit money. They were pretty cautious about putting the money into the United States. They were trying to keep those $100 bills outside the United States with the understanding that it would be too easily to detect within the United States. But in fact, it wasn't. And the money that was coming into the United States, the people that I was dealing with, they were passing them to banks, to merchants. We had one guy that had actually laundered $1 million of these counterfeit bills through the slot machines of Las Vegas. That's how good the bills were.
So, I mean, so he takes $1 million and sticks it in a slot machine and wins back $50,000?
Yeah, it didn't matter. Obviously, when the money was fake, it didn't matter whether he won or lost, but he could put it into the machines. He could take it to the cages, buy the chips.
Okay.
And then go take them back. If he played and if he lost, he didn't really lose anything. And then if he won, he would take the chips back, or he would buy X amount of dollars in chips with the counterfeit money, then go back hours later and cash in the chips.
Oh, I see.
And he would get clean money.
I see. Anything that he got back would be clean money. And so
sure. It's
wow. Unbelievable. Well, I have a friend who is he has a mom and pop business and they sell stuff online. And he was doing very, very well for a long time, for many years, a very popular product. And then the last time I saw him, I said, hey, how things going? And he said, man, we've been this close to bankruptcy so many times in the last couple of years, I can't even tell you. And it turns out that it's simply because every one of their products was being counterfeited over and over and over again online. So when you looked up their product on Amazon, it would end up being 15 pages down before you'd find the actual legitimate product. And everything that came up before that, with the same trademark, with the same name, with the same everything, was all Chinese made counterfeits. And he had a lady, her full-time job was to try to report these things and get them taken down. Well, now with the president's declaration, I guess the eBay and Amazon and other companies that were getting called out by name on this are being, they're being a little more proactive about taking that stuff down. It really blows my mind just what a pervasive thing this is around the world. Were you really surprised by that too?
I was surprised because at one point, I mentioned a little earlier, they were counterfeiting our postage stamps. It's like, we're talking 37, 38, 39, 40 cents a stamp, and they were counterfeiting the stamps. And they were in the $100 rolls. It had the 100 stamp rolls. It had the barcodes on it. We ended up seizing, I think, 20 or 30 master cases of these rolls of tape. So if you just think what a $100 roll of stamps looks like, and you take a master case, which might be 2 by 3 feet, they were filled with the rolls of stamps.
Tens of thousands of dollars worth of stamps.
Yeah. And it was one of those things that I'm not sure the post office department, I don't know this, whether they even have the capability of determining whether the stamps are fake or not, because it just goes through the machine and stamps it, saying that this stamp is used. So they were counterfeiting everything, as you and I talked about. It was counterfeit Viagra. And when we're talking about the counterfeit Viagra, we're not talking about little blue pills that are in a plastic bag. They were in the pharmaceutical bottles with all the directions, all the instructions and everything. So it looked like what you would find at a normal pharmacy behind the counter.
They were indistinguishable. When we went and saw those in Hong Kong, they were indistinguishable. That was amazing. So this kind of goes into kind of the greater conversation about China's dreams of hegemony and their full court press of industrial espionage around the world, where I've heard stories of them even, you know, hiring a company to provide software for something, and they'll buy the software, get access to the code, and then cancel the contract and just reverse engineer the code and use it. Did you find that any of this kind of actually worked its way back to the Chinese government and their, you know, kind of plans for taking over the world, so to speak?
I didn't see that in my undercover operation. I'm not an expert on China, but I can't imagine that there's too much that goes on in that country that isn't known to at least some level of government intelligence and information, that they have to know what's going on.
Well, I think that there should be a whole lot more that our country could do to crack down on China, our trade with China over that. I mean, so much of what they sell is sold to the United States. We actually have a lot of power in that. And I would love to see the president make a bigger deal about it, because in reality, it's really the small people that are being hurt by all this. And the cultural idea that if you're not cheating, you're not trying, is not an acceptable way to do business globally. And so I hope that the work that you did serve to kind of kick the ball off. And I hope that the Justice Department has run with that even further and will continue to do so. What was your greatest moment in wrapping up that case of the counterfeits?
Well, I think in terms of the $100 bills, it was a situation where the minimum purchase was $1 million. And so we had to put up $350,000. They were selling the money 35 cents on the dollar. Now, it's a long story, but essentially, I had been making money hand over fist dealing with the Chinese. They were paying me roughly $60,000 for every criminal deal I did with them. So we were banking that money. In reality, when we purchased that $1 million, it was coming out of my undercover savings account, but still, the Bureau in Washington, D.C. was concerned that we were going to get ripped off for the $350,000. So when the money came to us, it came in the form of they'd sent a 20-foot container that was filled with fabric, rolls of fabric that were roughly 6 feet wide and 50 to 75 feet long. And each roll of fabric was numbered. So my contact told me, look, these are the four numbers that are on the rolls of fabric. Well, the container arrived. I'm not in an undercover capacity at this point. I'm at my undercover warehouse, and I've got other agents helping us as we're opening up the counterfeit. We're opening up the container. We're pulling out rolls of fabric. I mean, we just keep pulling them out and pulling them out. And it's like, when are we going to find it? You know, it's not this roll. It's not this roll. We get to the last four rolls in the 20-foot container. So, and it's the four numbers that I'm looking for. So obviously they put those on first and then filled this whole van or this whole container with fabric, thinking that if customs did look at it, they're not going to unroll hundreds and hundreds of rolls of fabric. So now we get it and we're unrolling it. And I'm thinking, please. One, I didn't want to get stung, but I wanted to prove the Bureau wrong. And so we keep rolling it. My case agent and I, we're rolling the fabric and we're not feeling it. And then all of a sudden I sort of feel some lumps in the fabric. And I push it a little bit further, and there are the rolls of fabric completely laid out with the bundles of $100 bills taped to the rolls of fabric.
Did you turn it in after you got back from Hawaii or before?
yeah. You know, the funny thing was, as the whole case wrapped up.
Funny, they only sent $750,000. I don't know what happened. But,
yeah. When the whole thing wrapped up, North Korea was going to make me the exclusive distributor of the Supernote. And they were going to give me $40 million a year to distribute. And then, of course, we wrapped up the case. We between what we did on the East Coast and the West Coast, we indicted 87 people. And I always said I never kept any samples. So I still stuck with the bureau salary, but it was certainly an interesting case. And once we were able to come up with the money, it was kind of fun because on January 26th of, I think, 2005 or 2006, President Bush gave a press conference and he said, hey, it's an act of war to counterfeit another nation's currency. In North Korea, knock it off. We know what you're doing, because we had finally had proof that they were manufacturing the super note, the $100 bill.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And it is an act of war. So it kind of puts you on the front line in a way. Well, I appreciate your service to our country. And thanks for coming on our show. It's been pretty illuminating, to say the least. And I hope to get you on again sometime. Thanks, Bob Hamer. And
thanks, Chuck.
Out in Hollywood, California. Where are you? You're in.
Yeah, whatever.
Somewhere in California. All right. God bless you, Bob. That's it for today's Hot Zone. Thanks for watching. I'm Chuck Holton. And we'll see you back here again tomorrow.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.